Welcome to the FinTech Scaling Show. This podcast is sponsored by Scale Up Consulting, helping FinTech startups create a scalable organization to support an ever-increasing demand. When you're ready to grow, reach out to us at richard@scaleupconsulting.co. Now, over to the show with Richard Doherty, founder and host. Hello, FinTech leaders. We're really excited today to have Ralph on the show. Ralph is co-founder and co-CEO of FinSight out in Germany. He also is a passionate FinTech leader and has a number of investments and is a shareholder across a number of great little startups in and around the FinTech space in Germany. So we're really excited to have you on the show today, Ralph. Welcome.
Thank you very much for having me.
Cool. So I always like starting the show with giving the listeners a bit of insights into the guest and a bit of a background as to who you are, where you've come from. So maybe you could just run through your experience over your career and how this has helped pave the way for your success at FinSight.
I try. Basically started off very early. Programming with 16 databases by that time, whether it was like multi-dimensional databases, OLAP was a topic, so analytical databases and so on. So I was a lot into databases by that time and a lot into setting them up. And I met a young company. So I was freelancer first, and I met a young company, which the name was Kundus. And then it was BI, so business intelligence software and service company. And I joined them very, very young. So I think with 19, I joined them. And next to my studies was a very, very fun meeting with the founder by that time. It's now also investor with me together and some startups and with Peter. And he basically thought I was like 25 or 26. Mike Simot, by the way, that I always look younger than I am. At the time he offered me a managing position or a good position. So in the corporate development, it was called company development. And from that on, things went very fast. So the company moved quite fast across borders. We were in the UK, in US, in Canada, Switzerland, and Germany. And I think it's the peak. We were 260 people, 30 million in revenue, 35, something like this, and sold the software part to SAP and the consulting part to PwC. And during that time, I always was a bit closer also to other tech startups, was always interested in this. But we also were looking into M&A activities a bit. So looking like we wanted to explore a bit more of the financial sector. We were very much strong in chemicals, on logistics and that. Yeah. And we wanted to, so we spoke with Freetimes Company, who was is now my co-founder, and we explored a bit like how can we work together. And that was basically the starting point. And as we, as Kundus went through the exit process, we said we start now FinSight together, because we found that basically BI or intelligence, the things I did, and the financial industry, the things that where he came from, there was not much there. So I looked at my deposit and was always wondering, like, why is the data is there? Why do the banks not provide me with more insights? And why is it just a list of my earnings? Yeah. And that was the starting point of FinSight, where we just had a vague idea of the problem we wanted to solve.
And listen, so you started at a young age. What in that initial journey from scaling up to 250, 30-odd million recurring revenue and then selling out to or exiting, I was wondering what lessons you learned on that journey. What are the big things you took away from that has helped you really become successful at in your other ventures?
Oh, there are so many. I think it was quite a great journey. It was quite young there. And the idea of business intelligence was fascinating to me, but actually the business logic, how you handle accounts, how you grow sales, how you enter new verticals, like this was a huge learning. So we really started from very much zero when it comes to content. We just had we had tech people, and we had some kind of tech products, and we tried to sell them, but we didn't have a strong business logic in it. So our customers used it for processes, but we sometimes didn't even know the processes they were using it for. So at the end, I think one of the key learnings was how do you build if you have a tech capability, how you build a business capability at the end, and how you handle the accounts you work with in enterprises. I mean, if you build for large enterprises or work with large enterprises, one account can easily become six to seven figures in volume. And how do you handle this? How do you set up the structures? How do you maintain these accounts? How you create ongoing value for these accounts so that, that they do not want to replace the software or the people or so on. And there was something that was a huge learning, but also a lot of the soft things, right? Like how do you build the brand and build so my role was a bit like corporate development, like looking into everything a bit and try to see also internationalization, how this is going. And this was quite a learning also to focus a lot. So we tried very much things. Many things didn't work out. And many some countries were working out, some not. Some we put a lot of money in. But it's all, you really had to place it more on this end to handle the complexity. I think if I sum it up to one thing that it was learned the most was handling complexity of business.
And what you mentioned, you had a great tech capability, but you needed to build out your business capability. When you say business capability, what are you talking about? Sales? Are you talking about operations? Are you talking about all of that? What exactly are you referring to?
Yeah, by that time, so the Kundus company by that time was very much, very much a database oriented or SAP, Microsoft, IBM kind of technology oriented company. Yeah. And our customers were using this, but in their process of controlling, the process of marketing controlling, sales controlling, production controlling, and so on. So for the company Kundus, it was a big stretch to get more to the controlling kind of perspective, away from the database. And we know how to model objects to the topic of which KPIs are running and so on. And there was also quite interesting time we set up a business line, which is just doing the business side. So yeah, strategy consulting, let's say, to get closer to that also and to figure out more like what our customers are driven by. And it was quite interesting on the one side to see the strong tech capabilities, but really to see how can we increase value by matching this to the business to become not replaceable for our customers. Because let's say, if you just have tech, you're sometimes replaceable.
Yeah. I hear you. And as you spun out of that and you went on, you know, sort of your next journey and you started creating FinSight, I mean, how important was it for you as a founder, as a co-founder, to have a vision, have a mission to go towards as you started that next part of your journey?
Yeah, good question. I think the main challenge of an entrepreneur is always to live in the future. In some degree, so you had somewhere in the future, but the product needs to be somewhere solving the problem today, right?
Yeah.
I think a vision is good in that, but it also can be a challenge to link it. We had the vision at the beginning that we want to make advice, financial advice, investment advice, in a way that we really explore every asset the customer has, provide an algorithm on top of that to really link it to financial planning, to link it to find the best outcome for this individual customer and to be able to invest the money into a broad asset galaxy. So that was our main idea. Every single asset a customer has should be on the software, and so which is relevant. And then the software should help in structuring all of that and bringing it to all the kind of assets that are possible and wanted product universe, you call it, right? So alternative investments as well and so on. Having said that it was the vision at the beginning. And you then learn, as I was not from the industry, and then you learn like, okay, usually banks do not advise on third-party accounts. So if you are a HSBC customer and you go to Lloyds, and they most probably will tell you, sell everything and go with us, right? Not, they will not tell you, you invested here, you have a cluster risk in Asia, you have a cluster risk in this sector, maybe you should do a bit more in alternative. They do not take your existing portfolio usually. So not knowing HSBC or not directly, but that's the usual process, right? And that is something. So the first lesson learned was that banks do not really tax this process today, that they take for all kind of assets into the advice. They just have model portfolios that they basically match to risk profiles.
Yeah.
And that was, if you take that, that was a vision. But we needed to structure it very fast in a way that we solve a problem.
Yeah.
And the problem was not the vision, that was cool and everybody was excited about hearing things like this, like really no matter where, which bank you are, I provide you advice through algorithms. It was great. But the problem was, how do I make sure that my advisors are getting the customer, the data about the customer? How can I make the customer individual DPM, so discretionary portfolio management, that I really can say, customer single restrictions I want to add. How can I automate the process? That was a lot more important. Mm. So how can I automate the process of portfolio management for a customer, of advice for a customer? And how can I link custodian banks or that I really have a seamless process? And while at the beginning there was a very bold vision from a customer perspective, this is still the identity of the company, that we go there more and more. But yeah, the basic and the core problem that we solve is basically for banks to be very fast, or for asset managers to be very fast in turning on our software, which is then connecting very fast to the relevant systems, which are having the ability in a low-code environment to structure the processes, and at the end to be very fast live with something that has a great customer experience, that is adopted to the customer, to the bank or the asset manager's kind of product galaxy, the systems and so on, and to be there in days or weeks instead of months or years. That basically was more the mission than that, or what the mission became over the years.
And tell me, you mentioned customer. What type of customer are we talking about? Is it any person, or was it a specific demographic, millennials or other?
Yeah, also there we build it with a view of more the young investor type. Actually, the demographics are with every investment service provision provider, it's usually older than you would expect it. So we started with robo-advice at the time, which was one of the first things we did on our software, which was basically it's a portfolio discretionary portfolio management with model portfolios, matching a risk profile on a digital channel. And that was new for banks. So that was the kind of first use case we had. And there the demographics were, I know the talks with all banks was always like, hey, we want to target the young ones, the 20 plus. The customers were 40 plus, 50 plus, all good, but it worked. Always older. And also always a bit richer than we thought at the beginning. So also we thought of more like a mass affluent 200K, 100K investors. Was a sweet spot. Meanwhile, the most portfolios which are handled are starting there, but going more to the wealthy structure.
So you had your vision, your mission. You figured out the target audience. But what was the motivation to actually go and spend the energy and effort to get this tech up and running, get this business up and running?
I think it was really like
it's not a trick question, I promise.
I think it's where you want to win, right? You want to build something that is lasting. But I think there's also something else to it. I think it's really coming from the own customer. So the missing customer experience we faced on our own, right? So meanwhile, and I still think this is missing a lot. So our own tool is meanwhile used by some thousands of advisors, but it's not accessible, for example, to end customers. And I still feel like, so if an advisor is running it, the end customer can also see it. So there's dashboarding interfaces and so on. But I still feel the value of this, that you can really analyze your portfolio on your own, is really, really, really heavy and really, really powerful. So, and I really felt the lack of, I had such frustration moments with all this, because we then are talking to the truly great tech people and need to tell them, like, this is really how banks operate, right? This is really the current setup. This is, no, they do not have a good custodian API or so on. Yeah. We really need to get the data from a very old technology transfer protocol. And then, or there's really no digital experience for that. So we need to pass the advisors, because the advisors have a certain power status within the company. There were so many things that we really saw, like, this process in the end needs to improve, and it needs to improve from the industry itself. So you can, of course, also start a business that is tackling this as a B2C company. We decided very early for the B2B, because that's the business, this is the way we understood. So we always knew how to work with enterprise customers. But I think generally, it's driven by the motivation that this whole the whole way investors are structuring their investments needs to change. So improving how the world invests, we call it. Because if you look today, there is so much mismatch. There's bad, people are getting financially bad advice because the there is the advice process out there. People are not aware of cluster risks they have because they have three or four trading applications or new brokers, and they do not really know what they're doing. And I think that actually the data is there. So you have market data, which you can use. You have the portfolios, and that to bring this kind of insights and create better portfolios at the end is something that was part of the main motivations.
And take me through it. So, you know, I'm a new customer. I'm actually your ideal customer, by the way. That age group sort of fits me quite well, at the lower side of 40, by the way. So what's the use case? What's the tech in action? How are you going to take me through my journey of engaging and working with this solution? So it gives me, in this instance, a good customer experience from an investing point of view.
Yeah, perfect. So first, our customers are always the banks, but let's guide you through as a personal investor.
Yeah,
So first of all, you have the opportunity to directly onboard yourself digitally in a very fast manner. So it's a classical risk profiling process that you can answer questions, that you can derive your risk profile. You can always have the opportunity to include an advisor or leave it out. If you feel insecure about certain questions, you can, for example, reach out via the software to embed an advisor into the process. You can set individual restrictions, which is quite new for many.
Nice.
Not all banks use these features, but generally this is our software provides it.
Yeah.
So that you can say, for example, I, as Richard, have a certain I do not want to invest into bonds because I'm skeptical, or I do not want to invest into companies with a low ESG score, or so is environmental score, or I want to have a certain lower volatility because I want to take out the money maybe in 4 or 5 years. So it can create a very individual setup. First of all, that's something which is a great strength. And it can also link this all to your existing wealth. So you can really see, you can integrate your existing cash accounts, real estates, and so on, and deposit accounts. And it can provide you, if the bank uses this feature, it can provide you with the insights on this. So they can say, like, we see on software that displays that you have 78% invested in the US, for example, today. So while the old process would have been cut everything off, sell it, build new, it could be here, like, you build it, we will change this regularly, and you can keep single instruments or you can keep single investments, but we will build on top of it. That's what the technology is capable of. And then you get through an investment proposal process, which is fed by the product galaxy that the bank is using. And then you are onboarded, you have your investment, and you can always log in, can see how it is changing, what has taken place, how is the risk at the moment, so how is the geographical spread, how is industry spread. We have a vast set of risk KPIs on the platform that are helping you. So a bit guiding you depending on whether you are more professional investor or more basic investor, like, do you want to see sharp ratios or deeper indicators, or do you want to say, I'm happy with the basic and I want to just see volatility, my benchmark, am I missing my benchmark, am I hitting my benchmark, and I want to see the attributions, for example, also where like how much, which asset did put into the performance, like was this performance driven by European stocks, by, for example, it was a single instrument like Tesla making my performance. The rest was pretty bad. But at the moment, the other way around. So and that's something which you can see. So if we have not just the reporting, which is paper-based or print, and you get it every some months, but this is really like you have always insights onto near real-time, so not real-time, but near real-time, daily, end of day data, where you have really accurate access on how your portfolio is structured at the moment.
And this is cool. I love what you're saying around retail or basic events investor to professional investor. And it sounds like your platform gives the information tools to allow people to make the decision to take a risk or not take a risk, i.e. Maybe coin a term, educate the user before they press the red or the green button, the red button's exit, right? So how does that actually work? If I'm a retail or a junior investor, basic investor, and I want to start upping the ante on my risk and start doing some stuff maybe in bonds or doing a few hedges or what have you, how can the system help me up my ante and give me the information that allows me to become a better player?
Yeah, I think that's very important to understand that mostly, so at the moment, even above 90% of our customers are using it in a way that either the wealth manager or the advisor are structuring the portfolio. So you do not take it on your own.
Yep.
So I think, and I fully believe in this, that we will have this cross place in the future more and more. So that you have a self-execution part where you say, I take my own.
Yep.
And you will have your managed part, which is then the core satellite kind of approach.
Yep.
And this is so what really can help, I think, in this case is that you have a clearer feeling of better understanding also of what are you really, how are you structured in your wealth. So let me give you the example basically, and this depends a lot on the person you are. So you want to retire in 5 or 7 years, right? Mm-hmm. And the expected returns of your portfolio. How is the structure?
Yeah.
How much does the performance simulation show? System can give you, for example, also like hints on what you should invest, for example, if you want to reach a certain target. If you say, I want to retire, 500K was my target. And we said, I have enough to really go on a constant basis with my expenses to not have to withdraw too much. So they have a long chance of.
Yeah.
And this is all things that's helping you a lot, right? We have this module currently built on the financial planning component, but also on the similar question, like what is this, the returns I can expect? What are the volatilities I can expect? What are scenarios that can happen in the future? But also what's happening in the past. So it gives you quite much more guidance through this. And for an advisor, which is also very important, the advisor has a totally different atmosphere with the customer then. So imagine you go there, and I've done this with private banking sometimes. Was helping me very much to focus on this. So I was going to this private bank, and they basically told me in this conversation, like, hey, we have this great product. You can sell everything you have and take our products, and then it will be good structured, right? And you don't have the feeling it's personalized first.
Yeah.
You just see some flyers and feel like, okay, fact sheet dated on, at least last week, right? But how is this? I'm not sure, right? It's not really. It's a good product. It doesn't show much features.
Yeah.
And with this kind of experience, you have this advisor talks, and the modern advisor is now more like a kind of cyborg that can say like, or it's more like a power advisor that can say, look, we have all this data, and I at this time was doing the following: I was researching all the products this bank had.
Yeah,
I was going on the basic on Vista, it's a German portal, and so on. I was going.
Yeah.
And I showed the advisor that I have more data than he has. And this was purely embarrassing because I told him, like, yeah, but the performance is good that you show it on a 2-year basis. But if you take this perspective for 2.5 years, it was really bad. And I played around with this on my iPad. Then by that time, it was a cool experience for the advisor because it was really like he didn't have any tools. He was trying to work with paper against investors, which I used meanwhile to work with way better databases, way better. And also it feels better. So you have great visuals. You, as advisor, you are very much more empowered. You feel smarter. You feel like you can show much more. You can explain much more. That's, I think, the most important part also, that this whole advisor experience and advice experience for the customer is totally different.
And I can fully relate to that. I mean, I think what you're saying is bang on. And as you obviously the text being used by in the B2B world, but how, as you just going back to the journey, you had the vision, you had the mission, you started to build the tech. How did you guys go out and make certain that you promoted the product to the market? People became aware of the product and the business, and we're reaching in. Rather than having to push.
we really had pure luck by that time, I think. So we were very early on, as it was 2015, we were, robo-advice was a quite new topic. So we really had, this vision, which was quite bigger than by that time the software was. Yeah. So it was like an onboarding, it was a risk profiling, it was proposal of modern portfolio. So that was all by the time.
Yeah.
And when we were very early on this one, and we always communicated the vision to the market. So what we wanted to achieve one day and how it should be one day. And we got a lot of appointments also due to the network. as we were also some of the first robo-advisors were built with us. And we very early on, I think end of 2015, we had this press conference with Deutsche Bank, which was by that time, it's the biggest German bank, right? So it was a big reference. And there was now CEO Christian Sewing as the host. I think 20 press parties there from Handelsblatt, Spiegel, Stern. So really like big press was there. And we presented what we wanted to, so what Deutsche Bank was aiming for in the wealth space.
Yeah.
Together, so I was with me was one of the managing directors of German Deutsche Bank on the stage.
Yeah.
And this was a huge push. So by that time, it was the first really bank that announced that they will do something in this space. And then it was like the insurers were interested and like, what are the banks doing? And the asset managers were interested, like, how is this affecting us, right? How is this, if one portfolios or if my funds are not anymore part of the allocation, but the allocation moves to the customer, am I off the process then? So what does it mean for me as a big asset manager if somebody else builds an allocation and my funds are just a component of this? And this was by that time, I think, the major driver. So like, everybody in the industry knew that there was something coming that basically changes the way investments are done, away from fund selling towards customer-centric investment proposals. Mm. And technology would allow this, but how, it wasn't really clear. And that was opening up. I think that was setting the stage for a lot of appointments we had.
And you mentioned you were constantly communicating your vision to the market outside of the big PR campaign with Deutsche. What other tactics or strategies did you use to get that message to the market?
I wish I would have a good answer to this one. At the end, it's a small industry, right? So
word of mouth.
Actually, that's the biggest driver of all. And the industry is quite connected, right? So then you work with one party, which works. So we work with a distributor, a large distributor with a large sales force. And this distributor has product providers. Those product providers have also products they want to put on the reporting. So they want to use our reporting to display how the products are looking like and see like, oh man, this distributor, do you see what they've built? They have so great analysis of the products we have, or the allocation to the customer, which includes our products. Why can't we have the same for our products? And then you see like this process going on. And for example, 2017, we launched with ABN AMRO something on the market in Germany, which was like the first kind of investment platform where you had aggregation. So really like all accounts and so this was huge. And that was also giving us a great deal of insights. And I think the vision was always what was carrying us because we were very strong on what would come in the future. But what at the end was then, the translation was at the end, the customers were buying the core features of the product first. And the vision is 10% on the top, let's say. But the core was really like having the integrations, having the process configurations, having the uploading features on the product axis. So this was always like the more important aspects in the real life.
It feels like you're going through, you said word of mouth, but like a mini referral system where people were liking what you're doing. They're saying, oh, these guys are doing a good job. You want to chat? You should chat to them. That's pretty, that's how startups grow, right? Via referrals. That's the best way to do it.
Yeah, I think if you think about this like this way, might get some calls from the people who want the referral fee. it was a bit like that also. We had always customers. So I think meanwhile, we have 7-8 customers which are really very actively promoting us. And that's great. Yeah. That's super helpful. That's the best thing you can do. If you get an introduction to a customer, it's the best thing. And we have really, really strong. I think that it's also following this. We have the banks, but we also have challenges on our software. So like newly started companies, which are great showcases as well, which are very innovative in their nature. Mm. And also they pass us to other companies. And I think this overall, referrals is the best thing. Although there is no marketing campaign like word of mouth.
Yeah, exactly. And outside of, the stuff that we've mentioned, how have you gone about building up that system, those 8 or 10 customers that do refer you? Because ultimately, you're strengthening your place in the market, right? And strengthening your presence in the market. This is what we're talking about. I mean, it's just doing your job really well, having a really good tech platform that solves a problem that we spoke about earlier. What is the magic sauce here?
Yeah, I think the tech is one. I also do think that always, I think what's very important when you get word of mouth that the people which refer you are at the end getting a thank you for it, right? So
yeah.
they say, great, thank you for referring us together. And the thank you from the ones they referred us to. So
yeah.
And what drives us is basically, I think a lot, like, how much did they take away out of this intro? So like, for example, let me give you an example. Bank A introduces us to asset manager B.
Yeah.
And asset manager B then has this, we have this conversation, maybe there comes a cooperation of it, maybe not, but at the end, this managing director or chief sales officer or whatever, he at the end took something away from it, which was like learnings on the market, what trends are currently happening.
Yeah.
So a lot of this at the end is also, we were frequently asked to contribute on stages or being part of discussions, and this that's the vision or the way we saw the market was quite much interesting for many, because at the end we see a lot of this movements that are currently happening also with our investment arm. We also, or with our investment startups, we are invested in as founders. We also saw a lot of things that are happening currently in different areas. And so it was always like, I think the other person had good discussions afterwards. And if they buy a product, it's great. But I think that, to be very honest, that was at least the same as important was really that the part person that referred us to us got a thank you afterwards.
Yeah.
We had a great discussion.
And as you continue to grow and you moved into these different customers, different clients, I mean, how has that impacted your team? I mean, have you made certain that your team grows along and your team rises up to the challenge as you get more demand?
I think, yes, it's always like a company has a learning curve, right? The learning curve, it's super important. You have people that are on the learning curve. That's good. That's great. You have people that are above the learning curve.
Yeah.
That's even sometimes very, very good to keep them, to get them, keep the learning curve of the company.
Yeah.
And you have people, and that's also something, you have people that start above the learning curve, but are not having the same degree of learning. So that's the sad part sometimes. You have also people where you say, like, at the beginning, hey, great, this is such a great contributor.
Yeah.
It was great for the stage, but at some point you then see that the learning of the company is now a totally different one than 3 years ago. And 2 years ago, it's a totally different one than last year. And so it's from the awareness you have about the problems of the customers, from the awareness you have about what the technology, how the technology works, what it can do.
So your team has to sort of change over time as you go and as you grow and as you get a better understanding of the problems, the market, and also the changes in the market, right?
Definitely. That's super important. It's also cool to have some people which are more experienced at the beginning, but then you say after 2 years, okay, I cannot offer you a leading position because there was not the learning curve or other was so great. And well, 2 years ago, we thought you might get a leadership position because you are very advanced. Other one were so strong on this. So this is a challenging part you also have. But I think overall, it's great. And we have, if you look at our team, we have very young, also second row of management. So people which were coming into positions of leadership on their own, leading teams of 10, 20 people. And one example, for example, and being aged at 30, 4 years in the career and so on. This is being with us for 4 years. And so this is something where you can also have great, so can look back and say, cool, this was a super great development this person took. And we generally favor a lot of promoting also people which with right talent, with right skills very early. And yeah, that's something I think that's crucial. And having still the team spirit around it, we are very grateful for the team spirit we have. For this learning atmosphere also, which was challenging under COVID, because it lives a bit from the being close together.
Yeah.
Looking forward for it to come back a bit more closer. But I think this is the key to it. So that the learning curve is something like a KPI and so on.
Yeah. And I mean, how do you guys make certain that the learning curve across teams and individuals is reflective of what they want? I'm going to ask that question. because as a founder and as a CEO, we all know we want to get fulfillment from our lives and our jobs. So likewise, how do we make certain, or how are you guys making certain that your teams and your employees are getting that same fulfillment?
Yeah. I do not know if you can make this sure, right?
Quite a philosophical question on the FinTech Scaly show. Sorry.
mean, you can. I think there you can't. To make sure, is something I think that's out of our hands.
Yeah.
But I think you can just try to create an atmosphere in which, and let me see if I find a good example. So, for example, our sales head, he learns so much from product and on the so meanwhile he's like so much into the product itself, which is quite cool to see. Or while, for example, the product guys are so much into the asset management industry meanwhile, which were at the beginning we didn't, it was a big culture question yet. We had very few people which were investing on their own in the team. So we had a tech team, but the people were investing. And we are an investment company. We want to improve all the word invest. But the team was not investing. So first of all, like, guys, you can say they motivate them to invest, right? So it's just a bit maybe, but start to invest.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, it's funny that you go then across the company and you see then, on one desk he's currently doing some brokerage work, which is cool.
Yeah.
And people talk about it. And I think what you have, if you take all three together, you have like the learning about investment industry, you have the learning about technology, and you have the soft skills. And if all three people feel like they grow, and we try to foster this, and sales team learns more about the product team learns more about sales, gets better on their own, and I think that's where you want to go. And but still, this motivation needs to come from within.
Yeah.
And I think you cannot try it. Okay.
Yeah. Can't push anyone. I love it. I think that's a great, absolutely fantastic example. And listen, as the founder and sort of the CEO, start looking forward with your leadership team and your wider team into the future. What factors and questions are you considering as you continue on your growth agenda or your growth story?
Yeah, I think first is for us to get down to become more turnkey in everything. Turnkey means like the software can be used fast, it can be started directly also without any kind of person that needs to configure something or needs to code something. It's now, we call it configuration or implementation. We try to make everything in the configuration environment, but sometimes we still have to connect one custodian because the custodian the customer wants is not a link to us or so on. But generally, one big mission of the company is to become more turnkey in the product. And turnkey means also if you are a large bank, it doesn't so much matter if it's 1 month or 2 months or 3 months instead of a product. But then it matters. And if you can get down to 2 months, it's great. Faster sometimes is not even wanted because the process takes long. But also there, if you are able to empower a sales force, for example, or advisory workforce, and can say, you can directly use the software. If you want to make it a bit more on your settings, and a bit more for your process, we can adjust this over time, but they can directly use it. They can go to the customers, test it, and all of this. This is one major strategic initiative we have, is to become really, we call it turnkey in the essence of our product. And I think second one is really to scale sales. Sales is also process, a mixture of process and art. And I think Germans are, it's classical German company is like 20%, 10% sales, 80-90% engineering. We are that at the moment. So
it's fine. You did a good job, right?
At some point, you need to also, the more the turnkey the product becomes, the better you can sell it. Because then people can sell something directly with the immediate customer buying it. And then you say, I ring the bell, I did. And we come from the enterprise, a large enterprise sector was more like 2 months contract negotiation signed, and then everybody celebrates. But by the time you pass so many dates, you sometimes forget to celebrate. So we want to get to this more faster kind of also scaling sales.
Yeah.
And that's the third one. The third one is to professionalize the business as overall. So also like to professionalize the way we set objectives, so OKRs, so the way we track them, the way we analyze processes. We have meanwhile really the funnel history that we can see conversion rates, can analyze a lot on the CACs, the customer acquisition costs. So really to professionalize more on this, and also to professionalize more and more the reporting in the software. So how was usage? Yeah. How strong is the usage? So a lot of the things that you know from the smaller assets, smaller SaaS businesses, which is in the enterprise context, sometimes a bit more complex when you sell to large enterprises. But we still go there, and we still see that this is not possible in one more. And that's a sort of big strategic initiative, is the professionalization of the entire metrics and the entire business, how it's run.
Cool. So some good stuff coming up. And listen, I always like to ask my guests to share their thoughts on things such as podcasts or books that they're currently reading or listening to that you think the FinTech Scaling Show listeners would like to or should read or listen to. So I'm going to ask you the same question. What books or podcasts or YouTube channels that do you listen to or have listened to that you think are useful for our listeners?
I would cluster them. So first is General Future. I love Things About the Future. A great book I read during my vacation was Homo Deus. I was a bit late with this. Really, really fascinating thoughts on how everything will play together with the human becoming more capable, with drug, so with living longer, with being more technologized. So great book. Then I think I also loved the idea of there's a podcast from HBR, Harvard Business Review, called After Hours. They do it every year, so just once a year. But I love this idea of throwing hypotheses in. So they call it like 2021 will be the year that. Yes. And then somebody says like it will be the year that we will see food delivery companies building own warehouse, and so we discuss this. And there's so many things popping up. Great podcast show, really. And I think aside of that, what I hear a lot is now there are some German ones, Finance Forward or Finanzszene, which interviews the entrepreneurs as well. So I think that are more the scene. Small scene kind of contents, and which I enjoy also.
Awesome, and some really great content for the listeners to take a look at. And listen, as we come to the end of the show, how can listeners get in touch with you guys? How can they connect with you?
Yes, I think pretty much active we are on LinkedIn right now. So Twitter became a bit more passive. also I think this is today's medium. You can contact with us, you can reach out to the colleagues. We're all very interactive and active there. Also the company profile of Inside. I think that's the best way.
Awesome. And listen, thanks for the show today. Thanks for coming on. I really enjoyed it, and I really like going a bit into detail as to how you guys actually function, and also then taking a look at how your vision and mission is actually really helping people out there from an investment perspective, and also helping your team become good investors, which is great.
I think it's always important that the team wants to use the product itself. And that was something we were very happy about as we heard this more and more with the experience platform we built, that everybody said, like, I want to use it myself.
Oh, awesome, man. And, you know, looking forward to really watching you guys grow. I think it's an absolutely great platform, great initiative, and loved having you on the show today.
Thank you very much.